Where's your Christmas spirit?
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
That's better.
When we are born, we are swaddled and snuggled, whispered to, fussed over, tickled and cuddled. When we grow up, things get muddled, and here it is Christmas time. Will you stop by for a piece of delicious peach pie while I tell you my Yuletide wishes? You can help me do the dishes, 'cause here it is Christmas time. And we all want someone who will love us and hold us, to curl up alongside when nights are the coldest. And we all want someone who will hug us and kiss us.
Hello and welcome to a Third Degree Burns holiday special or holiday episode. I am Tim Elliott and I am joined with a whole group of gentlemen that would like to discuss our latest issue we're going to talk about, which is our holiday She-Hulk special. I have Brian Hughes.
I'm Harvey Korman. Oh, wait, no, that's wrong holiday special. Hi, how's it going?
We have Fred West.
Jingle, jingle, everybody.
We have Nigel Spink from Japan.
Hello.
And last but not least, we have Kirk Greenfield.
Happy holidays.
As I said in my very awkward introduction there, we are going to cover She-Hulk issue number 8. And I believe Brian has all the info on that.
Yeah, but before we go, I just got to ask Kirk a question. How far are you away from, is it 200 gallons? Or is it 20 gallons of blood donated? Kirk?
Hello? I'm sorry, I stepped away for a moment. Oh, you were asking about blood donations?
Yeah. How far are you away from the big, is it 200 or is it 20 or what?
As a matter of fact, I have given 198 pints as of last week. And so I have two more to go before I hit 25 gallons.
Wow. Blood over a lifetime donated. That is just so amazing. And just you're a great example to all of us. I salute you, sir.
My pleasure.
If I didn't hate needles, I think it's great. I could not do that because of my phobia for needles. I applaud anybody who can.
Well, I take insulin, so I'm not able to. They won't let me donate blood or blood plasma.
You don't want any extra sweet?
Nope. Sucks. Anyway, reason why we're here, of course, is the holiday special. Christmas is on a lot of people's minds right now. So we've got a very special issue of the Sensational She-Hulk, issue number 8. And the reason for that will become very, very apparent. So I'll go ahead and give you guys the important details on here. This, of course, like I said, is Sensational She-Hulk number 8. It's got a cover date of November 1989, but an on-sale date of August 1st, 1989, and that's going to be a special thing. Cover price is $1.50, page count 21 of story. And the title of this story is The World's Greatest Detective. And it was written by John Byrne, penciled by John Byrne, inked by Bob Wiacek, letter by James R. Novak, color by Glynis Wine Oliver, and edited by Bobby Chase. Now, this has been reprinted several times, this Sensational Hulk trade paperback, Sensational She-Hulk by John Byrne, which came out in like 2011. Sensational She-Hulk by John Byrne Omnibus hardcover came out 5 years ago. And the She-Hulk Epic Collection, Breaking the Fourth Wall, trade paperback, which came out 3 years ago, 2020. Now, as this book had an on-sale date of August 1st, that's right there during the summer months when they were doubling up on the books being pushed out. So just listen to all the books that Byrne had his hand in this month. You had Avengers West Coast number 50. Return the Hero, which of course returned our old friend, the original Human Torch. And Avengers West Coast number 51, I Sing of Arms and Heroes. Then there was the X-Men reprint, Classic X-Men number 39, which was reprinting Wolverine Alone, and Classic X-Men 40, which reprinted Too Late the Heroes. Obviously no new work from Byrne in those. I don't know if those had work from John Bolton or someone else, but I actually got a soft spot for those Classic X-Men reprints. Then there was L'Uomo Ragno, which is, I believe, an Italian reprint of Amazing Spider-Man 249. That's the one with the cover of the Hobgoblin and the Kingpin. And Byrne just did the cover art there. Marvel Age number... just Marvel 88. And it's funny because it was the 11th issue of 89. And that was a Fantastic Four finish reprint. Then Marvel Age issue 81, which had an interview with Byrne and a write-up on the Acts of Vengeance crossover event going on. Next, we had Avengers 309, To Find Olympia. This was written by John Byrne, but I believe penciled by Paul Ryan, with inks by Tom Palmer. And Avengers 310, Death in Olympia, by the same group. Then Ohatmu Update 89, number 5, Marauders to Power Princess, and Ohatmu Update 89, number 6, Prowler to Serpent Society. Then we had Sensational She-Hulk, number 7, I Have No Mouth and I Am Mean. I think that was it Zemmu or Zemnu?
Yeah,
like Zemnu. The Titan, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, sorry, Sensational She-Hulk, number 8, World's Greatest Detective. Then we had, he, of course, does the pencils on these, but the inks are handled by Bob Wiacek. We also have Wolverine, number 17. That was his first issue of Wolverine, the Archie Goodwin series, inked by Klaus Janson, I believe. And then there's another book, and I couldn't find really what was going on in this. I know I think it was just reprinted material. But this is called The Wolverine Saga, number 2. It was book 2, The Animal Unleashed. Stuff that was written by Peter Sanderson. So I think it had material that appeared in Alpha Flight 17, Classic X-Men 9 through 22. This is all the extra stuff that John Bolton had done there. Iron Fist 15. So that would be Byrne. And then Marvel Team Up Annual 1. Marvel Treasury Edition 26, X-Men 101 through 105, 107 through 116. So you've got some Byrne Austin X-Men there. 118, 120, 129, 131 through 139, and X-Men Annuals 3 and 4. So it obviously reprinted work of Byrne, but nothing new there. Still, with the 2 issues of Avengers West Coast, 2 issues of Avengers that he was writing, the 2 issues of She-Hulk, the issue of Wolverine that he penciled, that's quite a large month for Byrne. And then whatever he did for Ohatmu, but that would probably have been done months earlier. And now for our synopsis, The World's Greatest Detective. I pulled this from fandom.com, by the way. She-Hulk returns to her apartment from an adventure in space aboard a modified 57 Chevy. She checks her answering machine and learns that she has a new case, prosecuting a serial killer. After interviewing the defendant, she realizes that the case is purely circumstantial. She needs some hard evidence, and she only has 2 days to find it. She gets a call from Nick St. Christopher, who claims to have a lead on the case. They meet at a restaurant, and despite her misgivings, she hasn't gotten anywhere on her own, so she accepts his offer to help. Get her the defendant's apartment by going down the chimney. They find the first personal effect of the victim, but she can't use it as evidence as it was discovered illegally, say by breaking and entering. She calls DA Tower to get a search warrant for the place, and after accepting some advances and a present, she and St. Christopher lead the way they came. She learns that the apartment is not leased to the defendant. Meanwhile, someone known only as Mr. L is trying to get in touch with She-Hulk. The judge in the case tells her that she must connect the evidence to the defendant or else the case will be dismissed. Tower suspects that St. Christopher is the real killer. Mason suspects that he is some kind of supervillain. St. Christopher suddenly appears and teleports She-Hulk and himself to Australia, the defendant's homeland. They meet the defendant's ex-girlfriend, who rented the apartment but returned home after a fight. She agrees to testify. The judge, with his new evidence, will allow the case to proceed. She-Hulk confronts St. Christopher over his new identity. Before she can get an answer, his wife appears, accuses She-Hulk of being a hussy, makes a vague threat, and takes him home. Before he leaves, he tells She-Hulk to use his present at Christmas time. Miss St. Christopher makes good on her threat. Mason tells her there is reindeer manure in She-Hulk's office. The end. Now, couple notes on this story. Zapper's wife is mentioned in this issue for the first time. She finally makes an appearance after John Byrne returns to the title in Sensational She-Hulk number 36. This, of course, story makes the obvious implication that Nick St. Christopher is really Santa Claus. For anyone who has any doubts, it was confirmed in the Santa Claus profile and included in the Marvel Holiday Special number 1, printed in 2006. And then the gift that Nick St. Christopher gives to She-Hulk isn't open until Sensational She-Hulk number 36. Now, She-Hulk does mention her then recent guest appearance with the Avengers West Coast, and this happened in West Coast Avengers 47 and West Coast Avengers 49. That's all I got.
Well, I just want to add to that. Say? Well, just real quick, I want to add what you said, Brian, that we have covered the kind of the follow-up to this story, mm-hmm. which is issue 36, which is the one where Byrne comes back to the book in our episode 22. So if you'd like to hear what the gift is,
you should throw that out on Facebook. You know,
I will, because we covered that as a Christmas issue. And I'll put it in the, when I post this show, I'll put a link to that so you can kind of have both of them at the same time.
Excellent. Excellent. So what do you guys think about the cover to this issue? I mean, it pretty much says what you need to know. Anyone there?
Yeah, well, if you're not drawn in by Santa Claus, I think that the title, you know, the world's greatest detective, I mean, talk about a swipe at DC, that I got it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Taking a good shot. No bad ears on that guy. But the look on She-Hulk's face as she's sitting there pointing at this guy, I've seen this somewhere. But it's like a meme of a kid, like, seriously? But I can't place it.
Well, he's done this kind of, I do like that his artwork is kind of a faux kind of wide angle, the way he's got her drawn, that's much him. But like it Byrne, you see him do this a lot, this kind of in the corner shot where he sees the whole room and he's doing it mm-hmm. kind of like a wide angle. He's distorting the image just a little bit to get it all in there.
But yeah. I do love the fact that she's holding a book titled Law.
Just the law.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Okay.
But Nigel, she's not the law. Who's the law?
Who's the law? Judge Dredd, he's the law.
Right.
I am the law.
Except
I'll be honest, this is my first She-Hulk book that I've ever read. I've never read any more.
Wow.
I only read this one for this podcast recording. And as I told a couple of the guys earlier, it's like there's nothing here that would have attracted a young gay man like me to this title. So I was just like, okay, yeah, you guys are covering this. Okay, yeah, let me see this and read this. And I actually found some of it funny. And thankfully, John was here when I was reading it. I'm like, I don't understand this reference, or I don't understand that reference. And he was able to clue me into some of it, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, this was my first She-Hulk issue.
Well, the big thing with this run, and we've covered it before, is that he breaks the fourth wall, or she breaks the fourth wall constantly, as you found in this issue. That was the gimmick in this whole run, which I've said before. To me, it gets a little old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one issue is fine, but when you've got 30 issues and she's kind of doing the same thing over and over, it got a little tiresome for me.
But we did get 30 issues. That's the thing. This was the last issue that Byrne did, and then he took a break until what?
31. He started again with
31.
He started again with 31.
Yeah, Bobby Chase is on the cover there.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
I thought that were Rennie Wittestatter.
Oh, is it? Yeah, well, yeah, you're right.
It's Rennie Wittestatter.
It was Bobby Chase that chased him away. And if you don't know why, it's there's a She-Hulk graphic novel that came out that year, that issue 8 came out, called She-Hulk Ceremony. And it did things with the character that Byrne didn't agree with, and he was told that he had, you know, control over the character. Mm-hmm. Once again, being told something, and then they changed the story on him. So he left the book. And he did come back to it later. Renee Wittestatter was Marvel's version of the Byrne Whisperer, and was able to get him to come back and, you know, let him do it. But I mean, it's funny because on the cover of 31, he's like trying to put change the issue number to 9. So yeah, he left the book for a while there and then came back to it and ran it all the way to what, 50? Was it 50?
50, yeah.
That's right, because at the end of that one, didn't John Byrne get killed?
Yeah.
The Marvel Universe version of John Byrne was thrown out the window, I think. But, you know, hey, that's how it goes. Anyway, back to the this story. The artwork, of course, in this, I'm looking at it like a digital copy, but it is just so crisp and clear.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that Byrne is really enjoying what he's doing. In this, and it just the work on it, the work on her is really interesting. There's one thing I found interesting as we go through the pages, and I'll clue you guys in. But did you have anything to mention at least about the first couple pages as she's coming back to Earth in that nice 57 Chevy?
I love page 4. I loved how she included all the credits in the mail. I especially liked the peon credit for Jim Diglov down there on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
As a peon.
Probably assistant editor.
I thought that was very funny and clever.
Yeah, he was the assistant editor. G. DiGiovanna. Or DiGiovanna, that would be. Yeah. He was assistant editor. So that's
Byrne's always been clever about incorporating the credits when he can into a story. Mm-hmm. And this one, she even calls it out. She goes, "Oh, I got the wrong mail again."
Yeah.
Her return to Earth, for some reason, I don't know why. Has anybody ever seen the movie Heavy Metal?
Oh, yeah.
The animated.
A long time ago,
The opening sequence is like a 55 or 56 Corvette. Coming out of a space shuttle and landing on Earth, making her re-entry. And that's what, for some reason, this reminded me of that, because it's a classic car. It's coming through the atmosphere like that. And
didn't they have like a space van? Isn't that what Musk was trying to copy when he sent that car up?
I thought he was trying to copy Fast and Furious.
Oh, okay.
They went up with a Fiero, I believe. It was a Fiero that they went up. I think it was a Pontiac Fiero they flew into space.
I'm surprised that she didn't make a joke about air brakes when she had that 57 Chevy stop, because that's the old Bugs Bunny joke.
Mm-hmm. Or have her feet come through the floorboard.
Yeah.
She's trying to hit the brake so hard.
Because, yeah, I mean, it looks like she's really straining on what would be the brakes when she yells stop.
So my question is, whatever happened to the Chevy? Or the Dodge? Whatever happened to this vehicle?
Nothing.
She uses it later. Because she talks about still in issue 36.
Yeah.
She still has this flying car.
And the wheels do come out, so apparently she just parked it in the garage.
She'd probably drive it like a standard, yeah. Or she keeps it on the roof, maybe.
Yeah.
But she does a couple things that make use of her abilities, where she's breaking the fourth wall and she's stepping from her apartment into the office where Wheezy is at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And make comment of that she wishes DeFalco will let her use that in the Avengers.
Yep.
That's good. Go ahead.
I would just say the when we get our antagonist, the criminal, and he's just spouting off, guess it's just generic Australian slang. And she's like, I don't understand what your accent's too thick. I don't understand what you're saying. And then he kind of refers to that. Speaking English, he says, Dingo, Billabong, Sheila, Mara. I don't know what that means. Boomer, G'day, Barbie. That what it means what?
Jumbuck.
Oh, Jumbuck, yeah. I don't know what that means.
Abbo.
Something to eat, I believe.
Abbo. Yeah. Abbo, I think, would be considered a little slant or a little bit of a slur. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is not the most culturally sensitive book for 2025. No. Let's just say that.
No. But that guy's supposed to be offensive regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a great portrayal of an Australian.
No. No.
Spot on.
Yeah.
This guy that's talking to Sheeple, guy in the blue suit that's talking to She-Hulk. I mean, that's not D.A. Tower because he's a blonde guy. Who is this guy? And
he looks like a more constipated version of North Star.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, the profile images, that's what that made me think of. But the straight on face is just like some snot nose.
He's a public defender. He says he was assigned. He's a public
defender.
Yeah. He doesn't like the client.
Yeah, what's up with the pockets on his suit? Like, he's got, like, what, four pockets? It looks like he's going on safari in that blue suit.
That doesn't look right.
That does not look right.
Maybe that was a style in 1989.
Well, he knows that, Byrne did keep up with the styles and fashions. And
I don't remember that fashion choice.
Me either.
Well, speaking of fashion choice, the next page is Silent Pages where she's dreaming. I was reading Avengers at the time. I don't remember her dating, or was she dating Hercules? Were they involved?
No, I don't think so. Yeah,
she just had a crush on
a dream.
Okay. Right.
She had these dreams. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is that it makes him look like he stands almost a foot taller than her, or a couple inches taller than her.
Yeah.
But in Ohio, she's 2 inches taller than him. She's 6'7". He's 6'5". And if you watch that issue of, or read the issue of the Fantastic Four, the Like a Phoenix, where they bring back Jean Grey, you can see that she stands a little taller than him.
Yeah, but remember, this is her dream version of him.
Yes, it is her dream.
He would be taller than her.
Yeah.
His coloring is weird.
He's a little darker, too, and I can't tell if he's supposed to be in shadow or if he's just supposed to be more olive skinned.
And I thought he was a little bit furrier. Like, I thought Hercules had a little more body hair.
He'd have a Sean Connery chest. He would be. Or an Austin Powers chest is what he would have.
Yeah.
I like the look, though, where she's like, when she does her little wake up and she's like, Hermagel. And she's got a little bit of Durr face there.
Well, I didn't get where. She's, I sure wish the Thor writer would get on the stick and get Hercules put back together like he promised.
That was one of my questions.
I don't know what that means.
Is he in pieces someplace?
I think this would be, well, this would be what, 89?
Yeah.
So
Simonson was off the book, right?
Simonson was off, yeah, and I think maybe Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz had just taken over.
Oh, great run there.
And of course, they introduced Eric Masterson, but I'm not quite sure what they're referring to, because I didn't think it. I thought it was a bit too early for when Masterson actually became
Thunderstrike
Thor for a while,
or Thor. Then he became
Before he became Thor, I don't think he actually became Thor proper until into 1990 at the earliest. So I'm not quite sure what they mean by putting him back together, but it's around that time when he'd gone through a few changes. We're talking about Hercules, aren't we? Yeah. Well, we are. We're talking about Hercules, but it's in connection with Thor. I know now. Hercules, in another story, which I don't think I read, finished up being scattered into the universe itself.
Okay.
And so he was existing, but he wasn't in a corporeal form. And that was later dealt with in Thor by DeFalco and friends when they went out on a space adventure, and during that story they actually got Hot Hercules back again.
Okay.
But that would have perhaps come just after this reference in this particular issue.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of references, at the bottom of this page, in the bottom right-hand panel, and I don't know if you guys are aware just how big this panel is, because it gets thrown all over the internet all the time, because the image is She-Hulk standing in the foreground wearing, you know, street clothes, and yeah, there is a guy behind her that looks like he is whistling.
Yeah.
And there's a woman behind that guy looking at him like, what the hell are you doing?
Daggers.
And this is, there are so many memes like,
yeah, that's a meme. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what a lot of people point to, saying that this is what inspired that. Now, the thing is, you can go back 50 years before and see comics where a guy is looking at a girl while he's walking along with his own girl. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at the picture of the main meme that's been making the rounds, the guy's standing in the same position with his, yeah, hand, his arm the same way. Yeah. It looks like they went to specific effort to copy this particular image.
So, maybe.
But that, yeah, memes, that memes actual photos, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I question the guy on the other side of She-Hulk behind her. He looks like a young Stan Lee.
The hot dog vendor, or whatever he is.
An Italian, yeah, Freddie Mercury. With that mustache.
He's got a book. Wish we could see what the
title is. Oh, it is a book. Okay, I thought he was wearing an apron.
Yeah.
No, he's wearing suspenders, but he's holding a giant book.
Is that a book or a menu?
It's a menu. It's got words on it like it's a menu.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What's but I have to question Jennifer's fashion choice here, because that shirt looks like a Janet Jackson episode.
It's a sweater, though, isn't it?
No, it's a blouse. It's a shirt that goes with that skirt. But oh my God, it, like, you know, Janet Jackson was lambasted for doing the exact same thing at the Super Bowl.
Well, it's drawn in such a way that it's so specific, like he's really trying to mimic something, mm-hmm, he's actually seen, the way it's drawn.
Yeah.
The flower that's on the other side. So, mm-hmm, and I don't know.
And I know that's a trope of the title, that they're always trying to, you know, be as revealing as possible. But I was like, okay, this is not a 2025 comic book.
Well, and I don't know what.
Thank goodness.
I don't know what they're implying that in that when St. Christopher comes up behind her, is he just saying something and startling her? Is he patting her on the butt to say, hey, I'm here? Is he, what is causing her? She looks like she's been goosed. But
yeah, it has to be, because he doesn't say anything there.
Yeah.
I think he just appeared behind her knowing that he would be so close to her that.
That may be it.
He got his jumping face there.
Yeah.
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 Hmm.
Or air displacement from teleportation.
Interesting. You remember when we were talking about Alpha Flight issue, that last episode, mm-hmm, that we were talking about how Heather's clothes on the front cover
change,
were different? Yeah. Mm. And if you look here in the front cover, he's all in all red.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here he's got green pants and white tennis shoes on.
Green ascot. Yeah.
And
red sweater,
a brown jacket, yeah,
right.
So, yeah, different liberties taken.
I get that Jennifer is 7 feet tall, but he is awful short for a Santa, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, he's an elf.
He's written in some myths about him. He's written as being a very tiny little man, and then others he's written, mm-hmm, big fat guy. So
yeah,
I think that's what Burns is. He's just playing against the type of him being so short. Mm-hmm. He has to have almost a booster seat to sit in his chair. And her,
mm-hmm, I think we need to find that 2006 book that gives all the skinny on him.
Mm. I love the comment the waiters make as they leave about how'd they get all that crushed ice under the seat. I thought that was funny.
And that's the same guy from the meme page.
Yeah, the meme. You're right, it is.
But why do they all look so like bad haircut Giuseppe?
It was the 80s.
Get that that half-shaved look.
That flock of seagulls look going on.
Oh, I hated that.
Because his fellow waiter is definitely rocking a mullet back there. The blonde with the mm-hmm. shaved sides, the business up front, party in the back kind of thing going on.
Yeah. And then the bottom of this page has got the thing with Mr. L. Obviously, we know who that's supposed to like.
Yeah, we know who it's supposed to, but who is he actually? I don't remember. Does he come up?
A very D-list kind of supervillain.
I mean, whoever took over the book, did they bring this guy back? I don't remember. I didn't read those once Byrne left.
I think Byrne brought him back in the 30s. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, Byrne did bring him back.
And on the next page, Byrne creates the Harry Potter flu network.
Yeah.
By going down the chimney this way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I love how she makes the comment about the switching from, you know, what'd she say at the top of that page? There's only one thing wrong with cutting away from for subplots like that. When you come back, all sorts of time can have passed. And it's like, oh, yeah, she's aware how disjointed that is.
Yeah. She's constantly making comments of the fact that she knows she's in a comic and how things work.
Self-aware, definitely.
And she makes the comment that, are you some kind of a psychic? And she goes, well, I know it's a trope, but I'm going to be skeptical, even though I've met psychics, you know, in the event. Yeah. I've met actual psychics,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I found this very enjoyable.
This is all based upon moonlighting, breaking the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, but the trope had been going on since, you know, Greek theater.
That's true.
And in the early 80s, early to mid 80s, DC had a book called Ambush Bug.
Oh, yes.
And he broke the fourth wall all the time and you know, did some crazy things. Keith Giffen was the brainchild of that book, but it was very, very entertaining to me. I really enjoyed Ambush Bug. So when they were doing this in She-Hulk, I was like, okay, this is interesting, but I have seen it before.
Well, and for Marvel,
Moonlighting came up.
This is long before Deadpool was a thing, too.
Exactly. And he gets so much credit for breaking the fourth wall when really she did it first.
Well, Deadpool came out in 89, didn't he? In the New Mutants 90?
But he wasn't. But that wasn't the same Deadpool that we get
right
later.
I mean, it was early on, and no, he didn't break the fourth wall.
It's a basic,
like
yeah. Liefeld, I don't think, when he, well, I don't think Liefeld was writing that book. The Deadpool we see now, like the Ryan Reynolds Deadpool, is not what he originally started out as.
Right, and that was Fabian Nicenza, I think his last name is, that was doing the writing when they created Deadpool. But again, you know, the fourth wall breaking is something that's been going along, you know, you could sit there and say, you know, he was copying Ferris Bueller, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
Well,
not the only ones, it's just the ones that we're familiar with.
Well, a lot of, I think Byrne is, through her, is addressing a lot of things that as readers we think of ourselves. We're reading a book and we're like, or if you're like, you're watching a movie and like, well, this is stupid. This would never happen. Why would this do? Or what about, heck, you know, it's like the tropes you always think mm-hmm. of. And now he's just voicing them through her.
The
transition stuff and, you know, things like that.
So. And name dropping left exactly. and right.
Yeah, you know, left and right. And playing with.
And so we get to this next page where, let's see, you know, they're in the apartment. They've got, and Santa pops open a bottle of champagne. And look at the outfit that She-Hulk is wearing. The yellow, is it like a blouse?
Mm-hmm.
And just like every wrinkle and fold there, it looks like he had someone modeling something for him so he could make that fall properly. Mm-hmm. And of course, the bottom of this page is when he gives her the gift, a token, a small token of his esteem.
Well, I like the fact that she says, basically, you're too old for me.
Yeah.
He says, oh, what's Hercules, a high school senior? You know, you're the guy that's thousands of years old.
Yeah, but he's got eyes just like Tom Selleck.
Well, did anybody expect that present to pay off? I mean, I'd forgotten all about it by the time we got into the 30s.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say.
I had that question when I saw this, too. I was like, well, what's this about? And, you know,
we're going to say, I guess.
No, go ahead.
Are we going to say, I would say, especially after Byrne left
right.
the book at this stage, yeah. then you definitely not think about that present anymore. Yeah, because it's like, well, all Byrne's stuff is gone now. And yeah, so it was clever the way he brought it back in the 30s.
So how big of a gap did we have? If Byrne leaves at the end of 8 and a new writer takes over, they run to what, 32?
Byrne started again at 31.
It's over 20 issues.
So, okay. So 9 to 29 were somebody else.
Yeah. Steve Gerber apparently did.
Yeah, he did some.
Did a good bit of writing, but like the very next issue was like a bunch of people working on it. Richard Starkings and Gregory Wright and Brian Hitched with doing the pencils, but I think he collaborated on the story as well. And then you had Al Milgrom, Walt Simonson, and Bob Biacek all working as inkers. Mm-hmm. On there doing various pages.
Isn't Gerber, I should know this, isn't Gerber Howard the Duck? Isn't that what he's...
Yeah.
He's,
yeah.
That's probably why they brought Howard him on, Duck. Thinking Howard the Duck was kind of tongue-in-cheek, and he
one
might be able
story,
to do it.
Yeah, one of the stories is with Howard the Duck during that period, yeah.
Well, they probably thought he could write that type of story. More of a humorous kind of thing.
He had some weird
things. How did the sales figures respond?
No idea. Well, I mean, Byrne always had...
I stopped getting it.
Yeah, I read a couple, then I stopped.
Yeah. When I realized that he wasn't on it anymore. I mean, I got issue 9 and I think 10 because I just thought, well, maybe there's a bit of a... He's having a bit of trouble, so they're just filling in. But then when I found out that he was off, then that was it. So was I was off.
Well, it's funny because the villain that they brought in for that next book was Madcap.
Yeah.
And Madcap is just basically Marvel's version of Ambush Bug. I don't think he can teleport like Ambush Bug, but he was self-aware, nut job and whatnot. So I wonder if they like turned the tables on her. I didn't read it, but that would have been funny.
Yeah, I hung on for like 3 more issues. I did 9, 10, 11, and jumped off.
But still going back to this, they do the chimney trick and, you know, basically illegal breaking and entering into this guy's apartment.
Well, my problem with this is she's really acting more like a detective, not a lawyer. She's acting more like a hired detective to investigate. Lawyers don't really, I mean, yeah, they go and do, but they don't do this kind of stuff. I mean,
they typically hire private detectives to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever see Perry Mason?
That's right.
I watched an episode or two.
Long time ago.
The 70s.
Yeah. Raymond Burr in the 50s, black and white TV.
Yeah.
You didn't kill Thompson, but you did, Mr. Wells.
Yes! Yes, I killed Ned Thompson! I killed him!
He had minions, and he had Paul Drake act as his legs, if you'll forgive the expression. But he was always acting as a detective, too. I mean, that's what this has always been the case. If you have a lawyer show, they're detecting. I mean, what's his name? Maddock.
Matlock.
Matt, thank you. You know, Murder, She Wrote. You
was
name
it Rockford the detective for the lawyer?
This is Jim Rockford. At the tone, leave your name and message. I'll get back to you.
He was a detective. He was a private eye.
Yeah, Right, but he had wasn't like Stuart Margolin the guy who was always hiring him because he was the lawyer? So I forget. I never really watched the Rockford Files, but I seem to remember that they had
that. That's a great show. I've watched enough Law and Order to know that that's on a basis on. That's a more serious law show. But you know, they'll go out and question. They will question witnesses and stuff, but they won't. If they want something to investigate, they'll go back to the cops and say, "Hey, go and do this."
Well, it's funny because if you look on the next page, they're in the municipal court and they're talking to the judge, who looks familiar, by the way. And D.A. Tower there at the bottom left looks like Robert Redford in the movie Legal Eagles, which they needed a detective and apparently didn't have one.
It looks like Steve Rogers or...
the right image looks like Steve Rogers, Hank Pym, every blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy that, you know, they...
Yeah. Chiseled jaw, yeah.
But the left image is the one that looks like Robert Redford.
Yeah.
But
I think it's interesting that Christopher St. Nick says that the apartment that they broke into was used by the suspect, but he's saying it was used by the suspect, but it's not his apartment. Christopher St. Nicholas knows that that is not the apartment of the suspect, just right. That the suspect was using it. Did anyone else catch that?
And he was being naughty while doing it.
Yeah.
Well, that's when she says there's no link. We found the wallets and other stuff. There's no link to the Australian to... Because his name's not on the lease, and that's when they lead him to... they fly to Australia or, you know, walk there, magically show up because she goes, you know, it's like 10 seconds later and they're in Australia.
Same day. And as we know, and Nigel can tell us, it would be tomorrow there.
Yeah, that's right.
Good day.
I thought Wheezy's revelation was interesting. Again, not having read the comic book, I don't know Wheezy's backstory, but she was the blonde phantom?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she shows up in issue 4.
Okay, as the blonde phantom? Age.
Yes, Dern plays on the trope of a Golden Age character coming back in issue 4 in Marvel history. So Captain America in Avengers 4. Submariner in Fantastic Four, number 4. Blonde Phantom, she didn't know which one was going to show up, but it's a clever bit when you look at the cover because she is shapely, she's a femme fatale, and then what she gets is entirely different inside.
Yeah,
but what is she, an actual Golden Age character or a made up character?
Yes, she is a Golden Age character,
actual Golden Age,
who's been brought back
like Spitfire that he brings back in Namor.
And then issue 5, you know what happens in issue 5?
Dr. Bong.
The Doctor Doom trope that everybody seems to meet him in issue 5, and so they're all worried about that. But
interesting.
So this guy really, really had a thing for She-Hulk. I mean, she's 3 times his size, and yet he's putting his game on with her.
Well, if
you have a fetish, you have a fetish.
I know, and his wife comes in looking very much like a cross between olive oil and one of those weird witch ladies that showed up in the Popeye cartoons.
She looks a little offended by how Mrs. Claus shows up. I'll be honest, I was not happy with that. They did her dirty.
She looks like olive oil. She's dressed like olive oil, but she also looks like a character from the Funnies who was... I can't think of the Sunday Funnies, you know, a comic strip was her body style looks like that character. She's obviously dressed like olive oil and has a thick German accent.
Because
I read this in the notes when I was looking at the Ricky, she goes, you're going to get what's coming to you, you see. And they say that comes true. I don't know what that means unless they're referring to the later on with...
The office full of reindeer poop.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. But if you read later on, there's some stuff that happens between her and Wheezy when Byrne comes back. They do a little switcheroo thing. But
And of course, at the very end of this issue, next issue, Byrne out. Because this was the last Byrne issue for, 30 issues?
Mm-hmm. Or 20. So he must have known as he was doing this one that he was exiting.
Probably told him ahead of time. I don't know what the advancement of that is, but obviously he said he was.
You get what is coming to your use.
I'm gone.
Well, anybody got any final thoughts on this one?
It was a fun little.
It's rather amusing.
Yeah, it's a fun little, and Fred, the rest are a lot like this. They're all this. You've got the feel for the rest of them.
Yeah.
But,
and I see that trope would get old very fast, Tim. I'm like, it's cute on a one-off, but a whole series of it would be like, yeah, I've been here, done that too many times.
Well, even if he toned it down to where he did it maybe two or three references in an issue, but she does it throughout this issue. And that's how the rest of the issues are, too. So.
My experience is each time he does it or she breaks the fourth wall, the joke is always different. It's always freshened. It's always, it's the trope of breaking the fourth wall and that she's self-aware that she's in a comic book. But each time it gets expressed, it's done differently and in another vein. Or I found each one to be clever. I didn't find it annoying.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Nigel, you were saying?
Nigel
was going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, to begin with, I was going to say, I don't particularly like what I call silly comics, this kind of thing is in that vein, but I started collecting Sensational She-Hulk, of course, because it was John Byrne doing the artwork. That was the main reason for getting it. I thought I can put up with maybe how silly it might get, if the art's as good as it always will be. And so I got the first 8 issues, and then of course I stopped getting it when he went away from the She-Hulk. But of those 8 issues, I have to admit I didn't keep them all because some of them, and this one is one that's included, I wasn't that particularly bothered about it. I mean, I read it, but I thought it's nothing special. Whereas some of the earlier stories that he did, although it was still breaking the fourth wall and tongue-in-cheek and all the rest of it, the actual story was still, it still held up as kind of like a decent superhero story as well. Whereas some of the issues between 1 and 8 for me were a bit there, and I didn't keep those. Issue 4, 5, and 8, I don't have any more. I got rid of them. And 6 and 7 for a while as well, but then I regretted getting rid of 6 and 7, so I got them back at a later date. But yeah, so it was only because it was Byrne that I read Sensational She-Hulk. If he'd never done it, I would have never have read any of them, because I don't like what I call the silly stories, actually. But he actually did a good job with a lot of the stories. You know, I liked them anyway, even though they weren't serious. But this one wasn't one of my favorites, really, number 8. It was a bit meh.
Well, anybody got anything else they want to bring up on this one?
Yeah, last question. Brian, you probably know this off the top of your head. So where does this Christmas present pay off? In which issue?
36.
And have we covered that?
Yes,
Where can a listener go to get the...
It was our 22nd episode. We're going to have a link to it in the write-up on this. So if you want to listen to that, it's right there. Tim and I did the coverage on that years and years ago, like 9 years ago, I think. But maybe next year, maybe we as a whole group might come back and revisit it. Since, you know, Tim and I covered a lot of books before everybody else got involved, and we do like hearing other people's thoughts and feelings on the subject. So Never say never. Anything else?
No, I think we can. Brian, why don't you tell the folks if they want to get a hold of us, how they do that?
Okay, you can find us on Facebook. It's probably the easiest place to get a hold of us these days. Or you can email us at gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's gottagetburned@gmail.com. And of course, if you want, you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes. We're going to try and get our library there fixed here within the next few weeks. So, or at least I'm going to try and do it, but we'll see how that goes. We'd like to hear from you. So, you know, write to us. We also have, of course, the feed on Discord, which you can get on there and make your comments known about any particular episode that we've done. So, it's all moderated by Gene Hendricks, our good friend. I think that about covers it.
Doesn't Gene post on Twitter?
X,
formerly Twitter. I think
he posts. He does.
He kind of runs that too.
But none of us are paying attention to any feedback that's coming from there. In fact, I don't know of any feedback that's ever come from there. Where we've gotten emails, though it's been a while since we've received one, and we've gotten a lot of little notes and stuff from people on Facebook, which is always nice.
Yeah, I think we're over 1,000 members, I think, on Facebook now. So,
really, did we notice that when that happened?
Yeah,
we talked about it, but we didn't call that much attention to it. But it was a while back, around Thanksgiving or before that, we hit 1,000. I don't know where we're at now. I haven't looked.
I'm gonna look right now. I was on my Genius of John Byrne page.
1.0K members.
Live update.
Facebook page.
Excellent. There you go. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Our goal next year is 2,000.
Well, we will have to see.
Maybe Santa will help out.
Fine. As long as there's one person out there enjoying what we're doing, that makes it worth it. We're not in it for the notoriety. Or we're not in it for fame, and we're not in it for fame and fortune, as shortstop says.
Ah, well, who's our newest member? Let's see if I can.
Well, someone named Todd Martin joined about a week ago. I'm on the Facebook page and I'm looking.
Yep,
Todd Martin.
Martin.
Thank you, Todd Martin, for hitting that button, liking, subscribing, and sharing.
Well, I mean, you don't want to, sell short Terrence Bowen or Frank Gorzak for that matter.
And there was much rejoicing.
No, that's a great name.
Adrian, there's the Frank number Gorzak. Right there. We have 1040. I overlooked it. At the top there, it says 1040 members. That's not bad.
No.
I hope we don't get audited.
It's not bad for it's not bad for a bunch of idiots just talking into a microphone.
No, and I mean we get a lot of episodes pulled, in pretty high numbers, and that doesn't even count that get pulled from other podcatchers, because if you go out there, you'll actually see other websites that are linking to our show. What was the one? The one I was looking at the other day, because it had ours, Podcast Republic. Has all of our episodes going back to 2015 to today in order, so you can go in there and see the progression. It's harder to pull it on our webpage because it only gives you 9 at a time.
Yeah, you got to scroll through
a per page, and so you have to click through all those.
We're not pulling it back to the bins numbers, but we do pretty good.
We're close. It just depends on the coverage of the material. Like this one here, it's a Marvel book, and it is in that sweet spot from 61 to 89. And so there are a lot of people in those groups that will actually get a link to this. Whereas if it's an indie book, it's going to have a lot less coverage and a lot less people are going to see it as being available. But still pretty good.
I'll give you some.
We hope.
I'll give you some real-time information here on our, as my Excel opens up. I keep track of all this. So far, not counting the one we're doing now, this is what we've covered. These are just comics. We've done 4 Charlton books. We've done 28 DC books. We've done 11 IDW books. We've done 98 Marvel. So this will push us over to 100. We've done 4 top 5 lists, and then we've done 63 specials, and we have 26 that are like random episodes and stuff like that. So Marvel, obviously, is outweighing everything else.
Yeah, and Marvel gets us more listeners, too.
Yeah, well, he's just done more Marvel stuff. I mean, that's just a nature of what we cover.
Yeah, but when we're posting an episode out and I'm trying to share it out, I have to share it to places where it's relevant. And there's more relevance. I mean, it's just it gets more people pulling down the episode when it is a Marvel book in the sweet spot. Yeah. And that's really 61 to 86. But you can go to 89 in some groups. So that's pretty cool. Now, I know that you were talking about, was it Alpha Flight 20 or 21?
Yes. What Year's? About it?
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, I think for New Year's, we ought to actually do like another top five. We just have to find a good top five subject. We may actually go back and revisit, you know, one of the first ones that we did because it was just Tim and me back in the day.
We could do the top five Alpha Flight episodes. I'm joking.
Well, we've only done it once and I'll re-release it, but we did a Boxing Day, and I think that's when Nigel, when you kind of came on, we did a Boxing Day and it was our top five fights. So, you know, that's just something different. If we want to do obviously this show peeled the curtain back, this show is going to kind of release around Christmas, either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. And then we have another show that we may release around New Year's, and then we've got a couple other in the can that we can release within. But if you want to do a New Year's show, I guess it depends how busy we all are, if we can all work out a New Year's show or not.
I'm on vacation until the 2nd, so I'm like, you know, I got 10 more days off. Kind of nice.
I'm out on my vacations, but other than what we shut down for, obviously.
I'm retired, so I'm available.
Yeah, me too.
Kirk and Nigel have all the time in the world.
Vacation. Yeah.
And I'm out until the 5th, so I will be binging Stranger Things and Heated Rivalry and a bunch of other shows that are coming out.
So. We just finished Stranger Things 2 days ago, and now I'm waiting for the other episodes to hit.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I was telling the guys earlier, I was surprised to find out that Heated Rivalry started as a Captain America Bucky fan fiction idea in the author's brain, and she turned it into a hockey romance, and it's become the top-rated TV show, and it even outrated the Breaking Bad, one of the Breaking Bad episodes of all time. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Where's that streaming, Fred?
So it's streaming on HBO Max and Hulu.
Okay.
For right now. And they are premiering it in the UK, I think on the 10th of January is going to hit there. So it started in Canada. It was developed by a Canadian company. And then HBO bought it, and from what I understand, it streams on Hulu. So, highly recommend it. It's very good.
Well, there's a Netflix show that I've watched. If you like it, it's a Rowan Atkinson, and it's Man vs. Baby. And I think it's only 4 episodes. But it's kind of in the it has a feel of a kind of a Mr. Bean type show.
Nice.
Like that.
Is anyone watching the Doctor Who spinoff, The War Between the Land and Sea?
I have not.
No.
Okay. Highly recommend that one.
I saw the Knives Out. Wake Up Dead Man.
Yeah. How was it?
New movie. It's how do I want to say this? It is more of the same because it's the same character played by Daniel Craig, but it's a fresh mystery. A fresh set of suspects, but I want to caution you, some people will find this offensive because it revolves around, a lot of it revolves around religion. But that being said, go see it. Have a great time. We enjoyed it as a family, all of us. So.
We went and saw Avatar 3 last night, Avatar Fire and Ash. And I got to say, of the three movies, it's the best story of the three. And
I think I've heard
It had me very, very engaged. Yeah, and the thing was, I'd read some reviews that just said, more of the same, you know. But no, it was actually a very intriguing story, and the characters were much more fleshed out. I like the story of the younger characters was a lot more interesting in this one, especially the spider character, if you're familiar with him.
Okay.
And it was really, really good. And it's, you know, open for another one. I don't know if he's going to do 4 and 5 like he talked about, because he basically wants to dip his toes back into Terminator stories. So it'll be interesting. And maybe if this one doesn't do well in the theater, like most movies that are in the theater now are not doing well. I mean, we've seen it, like Superman, though, you know, they consider it a successful movie. Made about what, $500 million. Fantastic Four, made again good money, but not blockbuster money. And these are the biggest tentpole movies of the year.
I think the days of blockbuster are over. I don't think we'll see those days again.
People said that 5 years ago during the pandemic. They said that you were not going to get another $1 billion movie, and then Spider-Man comes out, No Way Home.
They're very few and far between. I mean,
and that one, just people kept going to the theater to see it. It's,
I mean,
really
Deadpool, Wolverine made, Avatar will make, it'll probably make over $1 billion. Doomsday, when it comes out, will make over $1 billion. But that's not a guarantee of profit now.
Yeah.
The preview for they had a teaser for Doomsday, and I was really disappointed in that. But, you know, looking on it, I understand why they did what they did. And, you know, for someone that wasn't paying attention to anything over the last few years, it's a pleasant surprise. So, I would hope the game is more than that.
Aren't we supposed to get Wonder Man? Wasn't that supposed to come out before the end of the year?
No, Wonder Man will be out next year.
Is it next year? I thought it was before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it'll be a series, correct?
Yeah,
they just had a trailer for it come out recently. And so it's interesting because apparently there was a Wonder Man 20 years before, and this guy, the Simon Williams, they have as an actor that comes in to audition to play him in the movie.
Nice.
Yeah, they're doing some weird.
But the funny thing is, like, if you watch Thor: The Dark World, there are some scenes outside, like a movie theater or whatever, and if you pay attention, you can see that they got movies that star Simon Williams.
Nice.
And it's Nathan Fillion.
Nice.
In all that. So they'd actually done something, but Nathan Fillion is not in the Wonder Man series, and he doesn't play the older Wonder Man. And it's funny because it looks like he's in that real bright green and red costume he wore in West Coast Avengers before Byrne came back. But yeah, just looked funny.
And Lanterns is coming out. I saw a little teaser for that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Well, I read that, whether it's true or not, that Hal and John share a ring. They don't each have a ring. They share a ring. I don't know how that's going to work. But
there was a little teaser,
that Radiant Black title.
There was a 12-second teaser that came out like a week ago.
That's the one I thought I saw. Were they in the car?
Yeah,
that's what.
And Hal jumps out of the car and says, "You know,
leaves the ring
save
there
yourself." So we'll see. And Kyle Chandler does make a good Hal Jordan.
Yeah, I think he'd be good at it. Yeah. Oh well, that's true. Well,
I like Ryan Reynolds, but yeah,
I like him, but he kind of plays Ryan Reynolds.
All right, well, guys, think of a top five list that we could do for, you know, New Year's or sometime soon. And we'll come up with something good. Anybody got anything else?
Nope. I think we can sign off. So I think it's probably getting late for Kirk, so you can go to bed.
Well, thank you all for joining us. I got to get to bed too. I am falling asleep here. Thanks everyone for joining us. Thank you, Nigel Spink.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to all.
Kirk?
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Tim?
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's. Wait, where's Fred?
I'm here. I was going to quote B. Arthur's song from the Star Wars Holiday episode and say, good night, but not goodbye.
That's great.
God bless us, everyone.
Yes. And I'm Brian Hughes. Thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's. Happy Kwanzaa. Is Hanukkah over yet?
No, it's still... Tonight's the last night.
Then happy Hanukkah.
Yep, happy Hanukkah. 8 crazy nights are coming to a close. Adios. Sayonara.
Just one more round, friend. Then homeward bound, friend. Don't forget me in your dreams. Just one more song, friend. And then so long, friend. The nights get shorter, it seems. Just one more rhyme, friend. Yes, it's a crime, friend. But you know time, friend. Time can fly. So it's good night, friend. Good night, but not goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.